Hey there, welcome to SaaS Inbound Podcast. I'm your host, Anna Dana, Head of Growth at SaaS Group, a serial acquirer buying wonderful SaaS businesses to take them to the next level. And here I chat with inspiring founders and experts to get an inside scoop on how they made their business a success. So today with me is Adam, founder of UX Pilot, building a new era of product design. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me here.
Sure, absolutely. When I learned about what you're doing and how much you're growing, I was absolutely, mesmerized. I was like, okay, I need to know what the story is here. Because, obviously, a lot of people say, hey, it's just an AI wave. So everything AI powered is growing, which is not true. You still have to have a good product behind it. So yeah, before we get into the weeds, maybe a little bit about your background, because you're coming from a consultancy side of this, as far as I know. How did you get to be a founder?
Exactly. So I'm actually coming from a product design background. I worked as a product designer for 13 years, had a chance to work with some big brands, Samsung, T-Mobile, but also very small startups. And at some point, as you mentioned, I founded my own agency. And there we worked on a lot of products on kind of a very quick cycles and so on. And we were kind of very much involved in this whole process of design ideation. When AI, especially with ChatGPT, became a thing, we kind of started exploring how we could apply it to our process, how we could improve it, optimize it. And that's kind of how we started building the very first iterations of UX Pilot, which was at that time just a side project.
Okay. All right. So how did you start? Like how did this idea got to see the light of the day? Because sometimes, it's just something to help you and it kind of lives at this stage. So when did you decide that this is something to monetize and give other people?
Mm-hmm. Well, we always wanted, I believe when you work on other people's project, at some point you want to also build your own thing. And we kind of wanted to explore how this could be happening also with AI, because we also use AI to develop parts of the product. And it was very much kind of an iteration and exploration. The first versions we had nothing to do with the current product, the current UX pilot, so to say. We were kind of exploring how we can apply it to research, to analyze, to help people conduct workshops. That was like a very first thing we launched. And we were not really sure where we're going to go with it. Maybe we just wanted to use it internally. Maybe we wanted to make it public. And at some point, we decided to, it was during summer, we decided to dedicate more resources and launch a plugin, just a simple Figma plugin, and then get more feedback from users and kind of see where it goes. To kind of keep it quite open, but still focusing on this area of research at that time. But it was interesting because even though it didn't get enough traction in terms of paid users or customers, we get a lot of feedback. And there was this interest around, wow, you're applying AI to product design. And people started asking questions about potential other features. And at some point, someone even asked me if we could generate wireframes with it. And I think all those little interactions kind of led me to believe more in the product itself. And then at some point, I decided to just spend 1 year building it and see where it goes.
What were the first challenges? Like, because you're also a product design person, right? Did you fall for the trap of falling in love with your product and like building more features until it's perfect?
Well, there are a few things. I love shipping. So I'm not like, let's make it perfect before. Maybe that's the trap, or that's kind of a problem I have. I love shipping new things, new features, improvements, and so on. And if you follow our newsletter, you will see like every week we have new things coming to the product, improvements, and so on. But I also believe, maybe also because we work with a lot of startups, that the key is to have something out there and then get user feedback, see the market reaction, and kind of take it from there rather than just trying to have something perfect that's in line with your vision, because there should be kind of a middle ground between your vision and the market needs and what users want. So I think that was not necessarily an issue. And I think even the pivot we had at some point, like going away from this workshop research aspect to generating wireframe, which even at the very beginning, when we were conducting internal workshops to ideate what we want to build, I myself said at the very beginning, I don't want to build something that generates stuff. And here we are generating designs.
Okay, let's maybe give a bit of a tour on what it is right now, mm-hmm. and where did you pivot?
Mm-hmm. So right now, the main focus of the product is to help you visualize your ideas, generate wireframes, layouts, and designs, and doing that by also integrating your design system and branding to be able to support your existing product, because most AI tools are good at generating things from scratch. But one of the focuses we have is to be able to support whatever things you're working on in a product team and kind of help you to improve your current product, add new features and new screens and so on and so forth. That was very much the current focus. And it started with generating wireframe as the main or first feature. Before that, we will exploring the area of research, how you can use AI to analyze your insights, your input from users, how we can conduct things like workshops, how we can guide teams to conduct workshops and then summarize or analyze basically the output from it.
Okay. All right. So how much of this was, you know, your kind of original roadmap for UX Pilot, and what came from your customers or users? And maybe if there was this one revelation that you really thought, okay, this is what's going to stick. If you can share that as well.
So when we started, after the pivot, the goal was to build something that's flexible, where you can explore ideas, generate wireframes, because most of the tools at that time either couldn't do that, or they only had predefined blocks. Like you would just swap these blocks or order of blocks or just change the text. You couldn't really explore new layouts. You couldn't say, I want to create a dashboard with two sidebars and a bottom nav and get exactly what you asked for and kind of ideate from there. So that was one of the limitations at that time. After we had that feature, and obviously we had to go through multiple iterations to make the output, the quality of the output higher, we got more feedback about how we could then translate that into something high fidelity, like the next phase of this design process. And also how they could bring in their styling, design system, components, and so on. And that was like a big challenge. We couldn't really solve that right away. But I would say these kind of two things are still relevant even until today, just because of the complexity that goes into them.
All right. So one of the questions, maybe I'm not the only one kind of asking about that, but do you think, you know, with a little bit of a skepticism going around AI and is AI going to take all of our jobs, do you think UX Pilot is working for or against a designer in a way? And is there an instance where, you know, a founder could say, okay, you know, like with the marketing tools, I fired my entire marketing department to use ChatGPT. Is it possible to say, okay, I fired all my designers to use UX Pilot?
Well, I would say you don't need UX Pilot if you want to rely on just your intuitions and so on. But you can also use templates. Obviously, the output you would get is different from output you would get by using UX Pilot. So there's a quality increase, and also the output is much more relevant to you. But what's also happening with AI is that all these baselines are changing. So great, a founder with no design skills can generate wireframes, can create layouts, can produce designs, or even build apps. But with the same tools, the quality and the relevancy and the output, even the pace, will be much different if it's used by a professional. So if a designer uses UX Pilot, they can manage to create more things, better things, than if it's just someone outside of the industry without that expertise. So that's when it comes to product designers and UX designers. Now, I think that's still relevant. There are cases where people need only technical ability. Like, I'm a founder and I just need someone who can use Figma because I want to get this absolute layout, this exact thing being produced in Figma, and I can use Figma. So I just use them to produce something, move rectangles in Figma, whatever. And I believe those jobs won't be relevant anymore because you can use AI to get there. But for things that are much more, that require more advanced knowledge about design, taste, usability, understanding of users and flows and so on, you will still need experts.
So AI is basically just helping more senior people to kind of automate what they have already been doing, maybe doing a little bit more, not necessarily bringing as many benefits to juniors.
I mean, it could also, I mean, definitely it will increase their skills and what they are able to do. We have, for example, researchers who are using UX Pilot to visualize their ideas. We have juniors using UX Pilot to improve the output or even ideate better solutions for what they want to create or for their work. So I think the impact is across all roles, but it doesn't mean like you're replacing an entire role. It's more about what product design means. If it's very much about the product itself, helping users, understanding the business, creating a solution, then sure, those roles will remain. But if it's just about using a tool like Figma, because I know how to click, where to click and how to draw shapes, then that won't be probably relevant anymore.
Okay. So you have already, mentioned Figma a few times, and, there's Locofy, and there are like many, many different tools, as you probably know. It's a pretty competitive niche. So what's the biggest differentiator? Why do you think founders would not go to Figma, which also has AI now? What's the main differentiator of UX Pilot?
Well, because we are design focused, so we are not, you don't have to deal with code. It's not a coding platform. It's very much design and visual design focused. So it's much faster. The quality, because it focuses on design, is much higher, and you can explore layouts and design much easily, much simpler than, let's say, using a no-code tool or AI tool out there. When it comes to Figma, Figma is still Figma. No matter all these gimmicks and tricks and things you want to put around, it's still a vector-based platform. And that's why also they have so many issues with transferring those designs into code. That's why there are so many problems between what's designed also at the component level and what's developed. There's always these issues. This is my design and this is how developers created it. So we are trying to bridge that gap and kind of remove it so we can design with code. You can generate things using your own components and to kind of simplify this transfer of knowledge, but also design to and handoff to developers.
So who's your best customer?
I would say product teams. I mean, founders for sure, but also product teams. So product managers, designers working on a product where they need to go through different iteration cycles, where they work on the same design and layouts over and over to optimize things and work on new features and so on and so forth.
Okay. All right. Well, obviously, I want to talk to you about growth, because I already teased that you guys are growing like crazy. And, you know, tell me a little bit more about that. But, you know, also what I've been doing a little bit before this podcast, just for, you know, research and understanding, like where you guys are standing. If you just go to Google and you say, okay, I want a UX AI tool, it's a billion of different kind of websites and tools out there. It's very, very difficult to choose. And I think we had this conversation with one of the founders here. You just kind of point at the closest one and you're like, okay, I don't want to think here. How do you overcome this? And how do you make sure that, you know, people find you on like Google or ChatGPT, Perplexity, whatever?
Well, brand awareness is always a challenge, no matter if there is competition or not. Competition just means there is a demand. So definitely that we are on the right track. There is a demand for what we are building. That's a validation. But we also spending a lot of time into building awareness, or to some extent being present everywhere, or everywhere our target audience could be present. So we are doing a lot of SEO, to some extent optimization for LLMs, also creating a lot of organic content for social media, so people just can come across what we are doing even passively. So I don't think there is like one straight way to do it. I also personally like to explore different channels and see which channel works for us.
Where works best?
A difficult question. I don't think there is one channel, because the journeys are so complex. Like, you might see something on LinkedIn for a few times, like something about UX Pilot. And then you might see something else, maybe this podcast somewhere else, on maybe on YouTube, and then say, oh, actually, let me search for UX Pilot. And then you search on Google to come across UX Pilot, and then you sign up. You might still not upgrade. Then you get our newsletter about new features that maybe you were looking for, and then you decide to upgrade. So it's very much this combination of all these channels that I believe is important. But I think we started mainly with SEO, Google, my LinkedIn profile, and also our newsletter.
Okay. And I mean, I completely am there with you. I think it's definitely about like just kind of being a little bit of everywhere and making sure that you pop up at the right time. But, you know, you still have to decide where you want to mm-hmm. pop up. Like, for example, for us, we realized that X Twitter is, you know, very relevant to lots of indie hackers that we want to engage with are there, but the algorithms are just like absolutely crazy. So we didn't want to be there just because we want to avoid that kind of frustration. And we know that it will take a long time, or, you know, too much effort. We don't want to put so many eggs in one basket. So we ditched that. Did you kind of get disappointed in one of the channels and thought, okay, that's not for us?
So we are exploring right now also paid channels, and we get mixed results, for example, from Meta. So we kind of tried a little bit, tried to improve our creatives, because it's also very creative focused. It's very important to have great looking ads and videos and so on. It worked to some extent, but it was not really worth it. So we reduced our budget. It's still something that we're exploring, but it's not like the main paid channel that we will go with for now. Other than that, I was active personally on X a year or 2 years ago, and it kind of, my presence was not, so I was not as active as before in the last few months, kind of stopped being there and stopped producing content there maybe once in a while, posting something. But that's definitely something we want to try out again. We're going to start from tomorrow, we're going to start posting new content and see if this time it works better, because obviously that is the same thing. Like, yeah, a lot of AI products are out there, a lot of product designers, tech teams, and so on. So I would say that's kind of our next channel.
All right. Are you utilizing Reddit or Quora for LLMs?
A little bit, but again, these are things that probably we're going to focus on next. Haven't really done anything. I believe, unfortunately, there are still some mentions of UX Pilot on Reddit that you haven't replied to. So yeah.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Well, you know, one of the things that I also was curious about is, because you're the first-time founder, right, and you're a product person, and, you know, we hear a lot about designers being like a bit too meticulous, maybe a little bit too detailed. I mean, I already asked you if you avoided falling in love with your product, but was there anything that helped you, you know, become the founder you want to become, maybe prioritize marketing and growth, not just product? I mean, marketing doesn't work for a shitty product anyway, but yeah, what helped you with this journey?
So one thing is to delegate. I think when you're not involved in how things are developed or implemented, you can kind of try to focus on things that are probably more important. And then again, I love shipping things. So try kind of finding that trade-off of having this icon perfectly placed versus having that feature out, then I would always say, let's release it. And then maybe we can improve the icon later.
Okay. And you're saying we, how big is the team now?
I think right now we're around 15, 16 full-time.
Okay. What's the biggest team?
I mean, like department, like, kind of?
Department, yes. Oh, I don't know, I call it. So it's weird to say department when it's 15 people. I don't know.
Well, I would say we have a lot of engineers. Mm-hmm. And then now we are building the growth team, but that's probably like 4 full-time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's still more, that's just an assumption, more of a product-led growth than anything.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Still, most of it is from the product itself.
Okay. So what is the big vision? Like, I don't want to say, okay, where do you see yourself in 5 years? But with AI, maybe, you know, maybe in 1. Like, what do you see? How do you shape that vision too?
So being, I don't think there's like one place we want to be, because things are changing so quickly, and especially with AI. So first of all, being still relevant is extremely important. So it means we need to innovate. We need to be aware of what's happening and be able to address the demand and all the changes that would come with. That's quite a challenge. But also being able to, as I told you, like the vision and things we are building and improving all around how to support existing products and existing use cases. How teams with an existing product can ship faster, move faster, ideate better, improve their products without going back and forth between UX pilot, Figma, without kind of being able to have this disconnect of these are my components inside Figma, these are your components outside of it, and so on. So kind of streamline this process and support them better. That will be the vision. So there are a few things we need to achieve, and there are a lot of things we need to improve.
Okay. And, you know, because you said you used AI to build UX Pilot, and obviously mm-hmm. it's AI powered. How do you deal with, you know, the changes in AI? So, you know, we as, you know, the general crowd, we only know like GPT-4, GPT-5, but there are probably like 1,022 GPTs in between that are changing. Like in my own experience, because I'm building a teeny tiny tool. And last week I came to my partner and I was like, I cracked it. It's working. It's, you know, it's consistent. It's amazing. And yesterday I came back to him and I was like, no, it's all shit. It doesn't work again. So they changed something. Do you deal with that? And, you know, how do you communicate that with your customers?
Okay, I think there are a few things here. So first of all, one thing that happened, I think that was very helpful, is that I started with GPT-4. That was way before vibe coding. The output was fairly slow. It was limited. I even bought 2 accounts to be able to bypass the hourly or daily limit. So one thing that also happened is that I tried to really learn what I was doing. It was not just prompt, copy paste the output, but really what's the architecture of the product? How should it be? How can I test the code that I wrote there? And even went down the path of how I can fine tune models. I even hired someone to help me to kind of learn about the process of fine tuning models and so on and so forth. So it was also a process of learning while coding rather than just getting results or output. And it's, I believe, crucial, because a lot of things we are doing is not like, oh, let's build a data set and or a database and then have our things there and that's it. We are also trying to build new tools that are not out there, new ways to tackle this, like how we're going to export things from Figma to UX Pilot, how we're going to import things from Figma. So we really need to build new things, new ways. And for all of that, you need to have a deeper understanding of what's happening. And I think that's also one of the things I try to focus on and still focusing on while learning. And later on, once we hired more and more people, then we could, I could delegate that. But then on the other hand, we change it with LLMs, I think one thing that we kind of see now is that it's not as drastic as before. Like changes from 3.5 to GPT-4 was extreme. Like you could suddenly create things that are useful. But nowadays, it's more incremental, like GPT-5. It's a little bit better. Gemini 2.5 Pro, it's a little bit better, and so on and so forth. So it's not like suddenly things are completely changing and there's something out of blue. But we are also running a lot of internal testing. We're not just giving... One of the things that also we are doing, we are cherry picking what would work for where. Like we use fine-tuned models for certain areas. We use normal LLMs for others. So it's not like maybe like other tools where you can select, oh, I want to use, I don't know, GPT-5 to do this and that. So that's also part of the process to make sure that the output and results are the best.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks for sharing. And what kind of AI tools are you still using to build UX Pilot?
To build, mainly Cursor. And okay. Yeah, with different models.
Do you use UX Pilot for UX Pilot?
Yeah, for design generation, ideation, and so on. It's extremely helpful, especially when we want to demo something or show something, like how certain things could behave and so on. Even internally, it's helpful. So I think that's a great sign.
Yeah, I would be shocked if you said no.
No.
That would be the first. All right. Well, you know, you're growing really nicely. It seems like you've avoided quite a few mistakes of a first-time founder. So what has been so far the biggest win and the biggest failure? It can be for, you know, for the business or maybe for you as a founder personally.
I don't know if I can call it a failure. I would say more of a regret or mistake. When we started growing, so we bootstrapped basically the company. So when we started growing, we were very lean and conservative with a way of hiring people. So we hired one. So it was me and my current CTO. We hired one developer, and then we waited 3 weeks or 4 weeks and said, "Oh well, we get tons of things to do, so let's hire someone else." And that was not the most efficient way, obviously, to do things. It was extremely painful. We needed to do, I don't know how many hours a day. He was working till 3 a.m. to ship things and so on. So it was crazy. So I would definitely try to probably speed up that process a little bit next time, like really build a team once for the next few months at least, and then start developing. So I would say that was something I still regret. But again, bootstrapped, I think that could also be maybe one of the reasons.
Yeah, absolutely. What about the win?
It's even until now, like I had a call with a team yesterday, and it's still amazing to see how people find value in UX Pilot, how it affects their workflows, the way they design things, either coming from a product design background or not. So It's extremely great to kind of see that we are building something that people find useful. Now, I told you, I really want it I want us to be relevant. So continue improving the product, listening to users and so on. And I believe all of that to some extent also is reflected in our numbers, in our growth, our revenue, which then kind of allow us to spend more and invest more into the product and kind of ship faster and improve it even further.
Okay, fascinating. All right, well, the last question is always about a hack. You know, you can share any hack that you think, you know, helped you or is still helping and mm-hmm. would be relevant for other founders.
Yeah, maybe two things I think are extremely important. So I believe nowadays with AI and all the resources out there, we all are trying more or less the same kind of channels and ways to promote or grow a product. But what makes a difference is very much the quality of execution. Like we discussed X or LinkedIn. Like if you can post, you can try LinkedIn by just posting something there and then see probably no results and say, okay, it doesn't work for me. Or you can really try to understand how to engage with that platform. Like you need to also comment probably, you need to interact with other people. You need to be consistent, maybe there are phases where you need to post certain types of content, the way you write the content, and so on and so forth. So all of that will then lead to getting results from the same platform. So I think the quality of execution is extremely important. But then there is also a question of how much time and how much resources you need to invest there. So there are platforms or channels where you really need to spend hours and months and so on until you see something, until you see results. Probably might not be worth your time. So it's good to also explore a wide range of challenges to kind of find that sweet balance between a little bit of effort, good enough execution, and then great results. Because things are completely different. Like you can do Google Ads for a niche that's not very competitive and get great results without really being a genius in Google Ads. Or you can go into a very competitive niche where even the best account manager, or I don't know how it's called for ads, can't really make it work. So it's also important to test different channels.
Okay. Yeah, that's a great one. So your channels are mostly LinkedIn and SEO. Mm-hmm. And what was the third one?
Our newsletter.
Your newsletter. Cool. All right. Yeah, we're still kind of tinkering with an idea of a newsletter, but also we're a bit of a different kind of business. Maybe we have a bit less to share. So still unsure if that's something we need to try, but really cool that it's working for you. Maybe later on we can talk about how you made it work for yourself. But otherwise, thank you.
Yeah. Nothing there. Yeah, I think that's just the interest people have around the product and the newsletter. We have around 400,000-500,000 subscribers and still getting 30-35% open rates.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. Yeah, we definitely need to discuss that. All right. But otherwise, you know, thank you so much for the story. I mean, it's really fascinating how you're making it work. And, you know, sometimes it's a bit of a different conversation here on the podcast with the founders who are, I want to say, a bit more chill about what they're doing. So you know the fundamental value that you're providing and you're just moving there, which is really great to see. So thanks for your time and telling the story.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, and take care.